Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, July 20th. I'm Aaron Shuller-Levine, still in for Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Sean Lichty of Northwell Health. Dr. Lichty is specializing in minimally invasive metabolic and bariatric surgery, including advanced laparoscopic and robotic approaches for gastric band, sleeve gastrectomy, and gastric bypass, and revisional surgery for weight regain and complications. Be sure to get your calls in early at 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. We will have more of Medical Monday and Dr. Sean Lichty just after the news. I think your microphone's, it's dropping down. There we go. We can see if we can get it there.
You.
No, you're,
well,
you're good. All right. I think we're going to take a very quick break. We will be right back and we'll get into some of the calls that we're getting to be a part of today's conversation. Give us a ring, 1-800-348-2551 with your questions for Dr. Sean Lichty. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's a Medical Monday on this July 20th. We've got Dr. Sean Lichty in. We're talking bariatric surgery. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551 with your bariatric surgery questions. You can always, of course, email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania, has got a question about hernia surgery. You're on air.
Can a ventral hernia be done under local anesthesia? And what about the connection between general anesthesia and dementia?
Good question, Jim. Thanks for calling in. In general, a ventral hernia is not typically done under local anesthesia. If it's a small hernia contained to the belly button, it might be possible. But in general, when we're fixing hernias on the abdominal wall, we like patients to be paralyzed so that we can close the hernia with no tension. Tension on the hernia is one of the biggest risk factors for the hernia recurring in the future. To address the question about general anesthesia and dementia, there are no studies in humans that show that general anesthesia exposure increases the risk of dementia that I'm aware of. If patients have very high levels of anesthesia that are repeated, it may cause a prolonged recovery in the hospital, but no known risk of dementia.
When it comes to hernias in general, I mean, when you're getting them, what are you mostly looking out for as a surgeon when they're getting, you know, to the point of an operation?
Yeah, great question. You can have hernias in different places. Sometimes they are in the groin, sometimes they're in the abdominal wall, like the belly button or above it. In general, if the hernia is symptomatic, causing a lot of problems, then we recommend getting that fixed more quickly. And we used to recommend patients to observe hernias if they weren't causing any problems. Now that people are living longer and they tend to be older than they were 20 years ago, we recommend people to generally get them fixed if they're a good candidate for surgery, because we have seen as people age, patients present to the hospital in their 80s with hernia problems, and we'd rather fix the hernia when you're in your 50s or 60s and in better health.
Makes sense to me. We're going to go to Chris in Johnstown with questions about robotic surgery. Chris, you're on air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I had a robotic surgery on my lumbar. I got a spinal fusion. And in general, hospitals don't own the robotic instrument. They are owned by a private company. The hospitals rent them out, and they're usually not covered by insurance. My surgery, I ended up having to pay a lot of money out of pocket for my surgeon to use the robotic surgery. Now, they can put those titanium screws a tenth of a millimeter where they're supposed to be, but What do you think in the future is going to happen to coverage on this robotic instrument?
The hospitals rent them out.
Good question, Chris. Thanks for calling in. I will put the disclaimer out there that I'm not a spine surgeon, and I don't use, that's a different kind of robot. For the Da Vinci robot, which is done on abdominal procedures, there is no increased charge that the hospital bills the patient where I work. That's becoming the standard across the country. There are different models for the hospital to purchase the robot from Intuitive, and I won't get too much into those details, but generally it's like a lease or an outright purchase. But the cost of using those instruments are bundled into the defined payments that are set by Medicare or your insurance company. So, again, I can't speak for your spine surgery. Sorry to hear that. I know that that is a concern that some people have, that these are increasing the cost of healthcare. But we do think that they're beneficial because of the outcomes of shorter length of stay in the hospital, shorter healing time, and less pain.
It's Medical Monday Vox Pop with Dr. Sean Lichty. We want to hear your calls. Give us a ring, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can shoot us an email at voxpop@wamc.org. I'm going to bring the conversation back around to the GLP-1s. You know, certainly I think there's a lot to talk about it from every which way. What I am kind of fascinated by is, you know, the potential, I don't want to say risk, I don't want to add that word to it, but, you know, the long-term impact of taking these medicines and what that could do to, you know, let's say a younger person's body, if they're closer to my age, if they're in their, you know, sort of mid to late 20s and they start taking them now, what's the long-term sort of journey for someone who starts them younger?
Yeah, that's a great question. These medications are all very new for weight loss indications. Ozempic has been around for a long time for diabetes, but for weight loss, we're still in the early phases of the medication. All of them have been tested by the FDA and found to be safe for human use. Sometimes people will ask me, 10 years down the road, will something happen? Probably not, but we don't really know. I think that the bigger problem with the medications is the data coming out from the drug manufacturers are very consistent in showing that when patients stop the medications, the weight comes back.
Right.
So for someone who comes to be treated for obesity who's maybe 30 or 40, is this something you really want to do for 40 years of your life, take this medication forever? Another kind of wrench to throw into the system is the insurance companies are trying to adjust to this new landscape. The medications are very expensive, and we've seen a lot of insurance companies restrict coverage or drop coverage completely. And if patients are on these medications and they are kind of hopping off and on and off and on, they are less effective for subsequent uses in the future. So I think these are things that we'll see and hear more of in the future. For people who have good insurance coverage or have the ability to pay cash for the medications, I think it's a great resource. But that is one of the concerns, the long-term use, just keeping the weight off forever and being on this medication forever.
Versus, when it gets to the point of actually going in for surgery, what you do is typically, I would assume, a little bit more long-term oriented. This is a sort of, you know, a last solution to dealing with that kind of issue.
Yes, and there are different types of bariatric surgeries. There's something called the sleeve gastrectomy and something called the gastric bypass. Both of those surgeries, we have data going out 5, 7, some stuff in press, 10 years, that shows the long-term weight loss is durable, which means that people will keep the weight off and maybe gain back around 5 to 7% of the amount that they lost at 10 years. Whereas with the GLP-1s, the data that Lilly is publishing shows that 85% of patients will gain weight back in a year and a half. So there is a big difference. In some of the studies that have been done comparing the medications to surgery have been cost studies, and they've shown that with the cost high right now, the crossover where surgery becomes more cost effective compared to medications is somewhere around 9 months to a year.
So, you know, apart from costs, what else should people really be keeping in mind if they are starting to you know, to weigh some of their options that they've got. What do you really recommend people, you know, add to that equation?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really good data that diabetes is treated very effectively with surgery, in particular the gastric bypass. And in some cases, diabetes can go into remission. And so patients who have diabetes should consider strongly surgery for weight loss. Other obesity-related diseases, like, for example, we have good data for cholesterol resolution with surgery. We have good data for reflux resolution with surgery. People who have GERD or heartburn, sometimes the medications make those symptoms worse. And so surgery can fix that problem and make it go away. So I think if you're considering treatment for weight loss, you should speak to a bariatric surgeon or a metabolic doctor about what your other medical problems are, because I think that there are a lot of options that can be tailored to kind of kill two birds with one stone.
I think I jumped the gun a little bit here, but Keith in Kingston, you're on with what sounds like a similar question.
Well, yes. Hello, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I'm 49. I'm very overweight. I have IBS, Crohn's disease. But how do you choose whether you do a weight loss drug, say Wegovy or Ozempic versus surgery?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for calling in, Keith, and sorry to hear about Crohn's disease.
This
kind of gets into the weeds a little bit, because sometimes the GLP-1s do reduce inflammation and may help with some of the bowel symptoms of Crohn's. Sometimes it can worsen the symptoms with Crohn's, and we have to kind of do a trial and error to see how things go. If you do a surgery for weight loss, I think that there are some considerations in the future about what your if you've had any prior surgery for Crohn's disease, that can complicate the surgery picture. So it's a very highly individualized approach for someone with your medical problems that I think you'd need to talk to a doctor about, to talk about the risks and benefits of each.
Yeah, so it's tough, you know, be overweight. I feel, you know, I sit in a chair, I feel like a big bear, you know, sitting in the chair. So
yeah,
thank you for taking my call, doctor.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. I do think that, Keith, you know, we have offices in Kingston too, and Rhinebeck. We'd be happy to come and talk to you about this problem. In general, I think one of the things that is nice about the GLP-1s is that you can try them, and if they don't agree with you and you don't like them, you just stop them. You don't have to wean off of them. And so I think in that regard, it's kind of low risk. There are some side effects from the medications that can be more severe, like pancreatitis or gallbladder disease. Although those are uncommon, they can, you know, lead to hospital stays and, you know, potentially a surgery to get your gallbladder out. But in general, I think it would be a good first step to try one of the GLP-1s and see how you feel on the medication.
Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551 for your bariatric surgery questions to be asked to Dr. Sean Lichty. So with that last caller, what we heard, you know, is some pre-existing conditions and some, you know, chronic illnesses. How does that really complicate the kind of work that you usually get in there and do?
If patients come looking for surgery with chronic conditions, most of the time it's a condition that will be improved by weight loss through bariatric surgery. And some of the patients who come in who are sicker and would increase the risk of surgery are patients in kidney failure who need renal transplants, sometimes patients who are in heart failure. Sometimes there are patients who have complex hernias that need to lose weight to minimize their risk of surgery. And I think with both the GLP-1 drugs and the surgeries, there are different sets of risks that patients should explore and decide what is acceptable to them. There are some people who can't tolerate the GLP-1 medications and are in the hospital with pancreatitis, or who can't get up onto high doses because it makes them too sick and nauseous and they're vomiting. And so I think a lot of times there are kind of multiple modalities that we're pursuing at once to hammer out the right treatment.
Do all GLP-1s work essentially the same way? Is it all the same sort of targeted and in that same way? I don't know exactly what that is, so if you could explain that.
Sure. It gets kind of confusing. There's mm-hmm. two major players. One of them is Novo Nordisk, and they make Ozempic, which is for diabetes, and Wegovy, which is for weight loss. Both of those drugs are semaglutide, and That, so same drug, different label for different medical problems. That drug is GLP-1 or glucagon-like peptide. That's a protein that regulates your metabolism, and that's how you lose the weight. Lilly is the other player. They have Zepbound and Mounjaro. Again, Mounjaro is for diabetes. Zepbound is for weight loss and sleep apnea. That drug has two hormones in it, GLP-1 and GIP, gastrointestinal peptide. And both of those, GIP is also a hormone that regulates your metabolism and your digestion. And that's why, because it has two hormones, you get more weight loss with Zepbound and Mounjaro. The average weight loss in a year is about 20% of your total body weight. And with Wegovy, Ozempic, it's about 14% of your total body weight. Lilly is also working on a drug that has three hormones in it that's going through FDA testing right now. And so we'll see, but I would imagine it gives more weight loss, but probably at the cost of a few more side effects.
I know that these are, of course, all federally approved for human use. When we're talking about adding all these hormones to somebody's systems on a regular basis, I mean, do we have any idea what the sort of some of the long-term, you know, potential impacts might be?
I think the things that I have seen that are very challenging for patients, because you're injecting yourself with such a high concentration of these hormones, your body does make these hormones on its own. When you stop those hormones, your body is not used to creating the GLP-1 on its own or the GIP. And it takes some time for your body to kick back in. So what a lot of patients describe to me is when they stop the medication kind of cold turkey, they feel an immense sense of hunger, of craving sweets, and it comes back kind of with a vengeance. And I think that that's the biggest thing that I see patients complain about. As far as, you know, long-term effects with does your body make less of it in the future, or I think that's the ink is not dry yet. I don't think we really know.
Then, so, you know, those are the new medicines. For the stuff that we've been doing for years, you know, as far as on the surgery end of things, how does that help folks, you know, cut some weight down?
There are two main mechanisms. There are more that we don't understand that we're learning more about. But one of the mechanisms is restriction, meaning you just can't physically eat as much as you used to. So if you get a sleeve gastrectomy, we trim the stomach down so that it looks kind of like the sleeve on a shirt. And people will lose about 25% of their body weight in a year. And that is mostly a restrictive surgery. There are some other hormonal effects. The part of the stomach that was removed has a hormone that makes you feel hungry. And so that's gone. That's called ghrelin. There are probably other hormonal changes that occur. The other option is called the gastric bypass. In that surgery, we make a small pouch in the first part of the stomach that's about the size of your fist. So there is a restrictive component. We also bypass a portion of the intestines, meaning we reroute the food so that you don't absorb as many of the calories as you eat. So with the gastric bypass, people will lose about 30% of their body weight in a year.
Is there less attention being paid to surgeries now that we've got sort of, you know, what people look at as these miracle drugs?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think people right. are much more interested in trying medications.
Sure.
I think it's lower stakes. One of the interesting things, we have done some good studies that have shown that people who get bariatric surgery, your body creates increased levels of GLP-1 on its own. So instead of you injecting it, you know, from the drug manufacturer, your body is making it in higher concentrations. And that is one of the, I think, benefits of bariatric surgery is you're helping your body do the work instead of giving yourself the medication.
We've got Dr. Sean Lichty here from Northwell Help having a great conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, to ask your questions to Dr. Lichty. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back very soon. It's Vox Pop Medical Monday here on WAMC. We are joined by Dr. Sean Lichty of Northwell Help. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551 with all of your bariatric surgery questions. 1-800-348-2551. You can always, of course, email us at voxpop.com. voxpop.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Lichty, when we're talking about, you know, these surgeries and these medicines to get people to where they are, what kind of work needs to be done on the patient's end when, you know, maybe they don't work, or, you know, they revert back to the weight that they ended up, you know, going to get surgery or medication at in the first place? What kind of work do you have to do? I mean, I assume there's a lot of conversations that happen when that ends up being the case.
Yeah, great question. For people who are going down the surgery road, there are a lot of requirements that individual bariatric surgery programs may have a few unique changes, but in general, patients are going to have to meet with a dietitian to understand how their relationship with food will change after surgery. They're going to have to meet with any specialist that they see, like a cardiologist, make sure that they're in good health for general anesthesia. Patients have to go to support groups to understand a little more about what the surgical changes are like afterwards. And patients typically will need some kind of imaging, usually an endoscopy, to look in the stomach and make sure that the anatomy is favorable and that we're not going to have to do any other kind of surprise procedures during the surgery. Every insurance company has a different required length of time before they would approve a surgery. And some insurance companies don't cover bariatric surgery at all. And so usually the first step is calling your insurance company to understand, what are my options for obesity treatment? Do you cover surgery? Do you cover meds? On the medication side of things, there are a lot of different and rapidly changing requirements for the GLP-1s. There are, you know, Medicare, for example, will cover Wegovy if you have heart disease and have had a heart attack or a stroke, or if you have sleep apnea that's documented to be moderate or severe. There is a new program they're coming out with called the Bridge Program that expands access to patients, but it's only in effect for about a year and a half. So I think the first big step is to call your insurance company and see what options are available.
Certainly, I think in these conversations about, you know, understanding, like you said, patients' relationships with foods, I think we are in a brave new age of understanding and being able to work through, you know, disordered eating disorders, people's various complicated relationships with food. How has the medical field expanded at the same time as sort of the mental health aspect of this expanded simultaneously?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that it's slow. Mental health just on its own still has such a stigma. And especially when it's related to food or eating disorders, it can be hard to find people in the Hudson Valley to see in person. Thankfully, there are good online resources, and particularly mental health, behavioral health teams that diagnose and treat eating disorders. We have good resources for those patients. I failed to mention, for bariatric surgery, everybody has to have a behavioral health evaluation. But for patients on the GLP-1 medications, this is a big gap that isn't being addressed at the moment. I think there's a lot of people who probably need behavioral health, mental health support, who aren't getting it. And it is easy to get yourself into trouble on the medications because there's a little less oversight, I think, from the medical field, particularly for patients who are getting the medications from like an app or an online service or a compounding pharmacy.
When you say get yourself into trouble, what do you mean by that?
I think there are patients who may have disordered eating or an undiagnosed eating disorder, or just need help with their relationship with food. And when you take the medications, if you're not having oversight from a physician team, it can be easy for you to push the meds too far, to lose too much weight, to eat the wrong kinds of foods. For example, as your body's losing weight, your body will preferentially burn energy from your muscle before your fat. The fat is supposed to be its last storage for energy. And so for those reasons, it's important for people, whether you have had surgery or on the GLP-1 medications, to be doing some type of strength training exercise to make sure you're eating foods that are high in protein so that you can maintain your muscle density and health. So if let's say you go to like an online app and get the medication, I think that component of education might be missing, and patients come in and they're becoming frail and malnourished because they're not eating the right way or taking care of their body. And they're losing muscle instead of fat. And it's easy to get into an area where you have vitamin or mineral deficiencies.
Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, with all of your bariatric surgery questions. Again, 1-800-348-2551. We want to hear from you. We want to get your questions to Dr. Sean Lichty. We can't do it if you don't call. 1-800-348-2551 or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. When we're talking about GLP-1s and the expansion there, is there a slowdown in the potential advancements at the surgery at the cost of these drugs getting the spotlight?
We have seen across the country that surgery volumes have dropped. And I think that for most places, the low point of the drop has probably happened. It's kind of an evolving process. There are patients, I think, who will... I've seen with time as patients are on the medications, they hop on and off, they lose weight, they gain weight back, et cetera. Then a lot of those patients will jump over into the surgery pathway. So I think that you're going to see a lot more back and forth in the future.
Sure, sure. As one not becomes less reliable, but people, you know, realize that we've been doing one for a lot longer than than prescribing the other, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There are
instances, too, where patients, you know, sometimes we see patients who've had bariatric surgery and then they become pregnant and then they gain weight back and it's challenging to lose the weight again. And, you know, those patients, too, I think are good candidates for medications for weight loss because they've already had a surgery and they need kind of a kickstart to get back on path and to lose some of the baby weight, et cetera. So I think for both surgery and medicine, we're seeing a marriage of the two and a combination of the two being used.
Is it recommended to be taking GLP-1s while you are pregnant?
No, you cannot.
You cannot. Okay.
You cannot.
right.
That's a good point because I have seen a few patients who become pregnant while you're on the medication. And it's important to discuss with your medical team contraception and what kinds are effective because that can, you know, it can get into the placenta, and we don't really know what it does to babies, so it has to be stopped.
Vox Pop Medical Monday, we've got Dr. Sean Lichty talking bariatric surgery. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Stan in Hardwick, Massachusetts, you're on.
Oh, all right, great. Thank you. Thanks for taking the call. So I'm calling in reaction to a couple comments. One, I am a type 2 diabetic. I lost about 60 pounds on GLP-1, starting with Trulicity, then moving to Ozempic. But I lost a lot of muscle mass. And the first question is, I never received guidance. I go to a diabetic center every 3 months for support and never received guidance on food around GLP-1s. So how do you recover from the muscle mass loss? That's one question. And the second question is, I find the idea of using bariatric surgery as a treatment for diabetes, which I think I heard earlier in the call, a little bit extreme. And I was at 230 and I went down to now 168 over the course of a couple of years. I could not imagine considering bariatric surgery for diabetes treatment. Can you say any more?
Yes. Thanks for calling in, Stan. Great questions and congratulations on your weight loss. I think that's amazing. To address your first question regarding the muscle loss, it can be hard, especially when the GLP-1s are used for diabetes, because typically it's prescribed through an endocrinologist or a primary care doctor. And the goal that they're looking for is the hemoglobin A1C numbers to go down, ideally to normal. But the dosing may not be titrated based on your digestive symptoms or your fullness symptoms. And I think it's easy to, what's happened to you, for those things to kind of get ignored. Regarding what do you do now, I think the things that will be the most helpful are to focus on a high protein diet, you should be eating at least 60 grams of protein a day. Ideally, if you can get up 80 to 100 grams a day, that's ideal. And doing some type of resistance training or strength training, something where you're using those muscles to kind of rebuild the muscle mass. It can happen. It can take some time, but that's what I would start with. Also, if you can find access to a dietitian who specializes in bariatric surgery or the GLP-1 medications, I think they're your best resource for taking a deep dive into your diet and figuring out how you can kind of reverse the muscle loss that you've noticed. To address your second question, you're not alone. There are a lot of people who feel like it's a very dramatic response to diabetes. The American Diabetes Association did even publish in their most recent guidelines that bariatric surgery is an effective and safe method for treating type 2 diabetes. And the mechanisms of the hormonal changes after surgery and the way that your body digests and absorbs food and the way that the GLP-1 sensitizes your insulin, it can reverse diabetes in some cases, or at least improve it in most cases. So, you know, my own philosophy is that every patient should be comfortable with the treatment that you pursue. And if the GLP-1s sound a lot more, you know, reasonable to you, then I think by all means, that's great. I hope your A1C has improved. Certainly with weight loss, the insulin is going to be more sensitive, and I hope you're not requiring any Trulicity or you know, well, I guess you're on Ozempic, but insulin therapy or anything at this point.
Well, you know, I do. When I was diagnosed, my A1C was 11. I was at 500 on my sugar and down to maybe A1C around 7.2, but seemed to hit a plateau at 7.2, and I still can, with just a little bit of eating food, I can spike to 300 and take a couple hours to come back down to maybe 170 or something on the sugar. So it's I feel like the GLP-1 certainly knocked the weight down, but I take 24-hour long-acting insulin. I take Synjardy. I don't see myself winning on the A1C battle.
Yeah, definitely a huge improvement. There are people who have very high blood sugar or A1C levels pre-treatment, people who've had diabetes for longer than a year or two. It is harder for the diabetes to be reversed. Like, you know, if you catch it early, it's easier to treat. There are options you could discuss with your endocrinologist or your primary care doctor, potentially Mounjaro, since it has that second hormone in it, GIP. Maybe you can get a little more bang for your buck out of the medications, and that may be able to help.
Yeah, I heard that, but more weight loss too, though. I think my weight is about nice right now. I wouldn't want to lose more, but I heard you say the Mounjaro is like 20%.
It can. Once you hit the once you hit kind of the end of your weight loss, though, as long as you're keeping up with the protein and the exercise and all the other lifestyle changes, patients typically will kind of not overshoot and bottom out too far if you're doing the other things as well.
Stan, thanks so much for giving us a call. We're going to go to Denise in Slingerlands. Denise, you're on.
Hi, thank you. This has been a very interesting program. My question is, I had chemotherapy for breast cancer, and it was my second time round with chemo, and it's really disrupted my metabolism. I've put on about 20, 25 pounds posted. I'm doing well in the cancer area. And my oncologist, you know, we've talked about trying a course of the GLP-1 to get me back to a reasonable weight, and they feel it's safe and that I could do it. But what I was learning from hearing you talk is that I might try this and then put the weight back on again. And I'm just wondering what your experience may be with this kind of post-chemo effect. Apparently it's something that's known in the field, this happens, and it's just very tough to take off.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Denise, and congratulations on the successful treatment so far. I think you're not alone. There are a lot of patients that we treat who are in your situation. There are a lot of patients who are on GLP-1s and lose a lot of weight on those medications after chemotherapy. And the good news is that weight loss, whether through GLP-1s or bariatric surgery, is effective at reducing the risk of breast cancer recurrence. And so any kind of treatment is going to be very beneficial for just your cancer recurrence risk. I think that it is one of the unfortunate side effects of the medications that when you stop them, people do tend to gain the weight back again. That's kind of when it becomes an individualized discussion with you regarding your current, like if you're going to be needing more treatment in the future, or if you're going to be getting radiation or something like that, the medications are probably better because you can do that concurrently in most situations as long as your breast cancer team is on board.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, at the moment, thank goodness, I do not need further treatment. So, and that's why they've given me, you know, kind of the go-ahead if I want to try this path. So that's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Denise, thank you for calling in. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting point as far as, you know, the work that you do, either surgery-wise or GLP-1s, being, you know, after going through something like a cancer or, you know, other illnesses on the other end of those things, there's that sort of continuing struggle, of again, that I'm assuming you guys see a lot of.
Yeah, and, you know, the data is still kind of young in this arena, but we do know that obesity, your fat cells will secrete hormones that cause a lot of inflammation, and the inflammation makes it easier for cancer cells to grow. And stopping that pathway does have a positive effect on reducing cancer recurrence. So I think, you know, patients who have gone through any kind of cancer treatment, breast cancer is common, sometimes colorectal cancer, who are overweight, it's a good option to consider.
Susan in Middlebury, Vermont, you're on.
Yes, hi. I had gastric bypass surgery, must be at least 10, 12, well, a little bit longer, maybe 14 years ago. I went from 210 to 125. And after that, I pretty much kept within 125 and 140, but I started going up to 145, and I'm now back down again. But I'd like to see, because I'm starting to feel like I'm creeping up again. So I want to know if weight loss drugs would be prescribed for me, and because I'm 74, and I'm only 4'10 at the moment. I'm shrinking, so I want to know if weight loss drugs would be that I could get a prescription for them, and would they be helpful to kind of maintain?
Yeah, thanks for calling, Susan. Great question. So in your situation, I would presume that you have Medicare, and the Medicare guidelines for the GLP-1 medications are pretty strict. However, recently they came out with something called the Bridge Program, which expands coverage for GLP-1 therapy. Because you're pretty short, I would imagine even if you're 140 pounds, your BMI is probably elevated. And a lot of it depends on what your BMI is and if you have any other medical problems, if they'll cover the drug for you. But I do think that patients who have weight regain after bariatric surgery, even if it's 10 or 12 years later, are excellent candidates for GLP-1 therapy. There are also potentially anatomic problems with the bypass that could lead to weight regain. But with the small amount of regain that you're, which is, I know it's a lot, you know, any weight regain we don't want. But the degree of weight regain is not so severe that I think that there's a major problem with the bypass. So short answer, yes, I think GLP-1s would definitely help you. And you might be covered under the Bridge Program. I would talk about it with your doctor.
Susan, thanks so much for giving us a ring. We're getting close to the finish line here, but we're going to go for one more call. Mark in East Moncton, you're on.
Yes, talking about protein, I'm 76, and I'm totally into a plant-based diet now because I had issues with gout and uric acid, so on and so forth. But yogurt, you know, it's probiotics. If you don't have a good gut health, you can eat the best food in the world, and your body's not going to absorb it, and you have issues. And also sugar, man, stop drinking soda and all that and coconut water for electrolytes, you know, and everything I have is organic. And I have to work every day at it, you know, and it is work, but it's great to see that, you know, once you exercise, so on and so forth, I ride a Schwinn Aerodyne, I lift weights. I have my aches and pains, but I'm just determined that I would rather drop dead than be in bed.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. All very, very important points. It's very important to limit sugar. And on that note, soda is really bad. Alcohol, too, is a common problem. Per gram, alcohol has twice as many calories as sugar does. So just be very mindful of that.
Thank you, Mark, for giving us a call. We are just about out of time for our show. I want to thank everybody who called in. Thanks to Dr. Sean Lichty. You made it through your first show. We hope you'll come back. Support for Vox Pop comes from the Albany Pine Bush Discovery Center, presenting Nature Night Out on August 6th with extended hours until 7 p.m., food vendors, music, and a story walk along the trail. AlbanyPineBush.org. Thanks again for joining us today on our Medical Monday Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Riley. Thank you to everybody in the newsroom and the production booth for helping us get through the show. I'm Aaron Shella Levine in for Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Therapeutic Massage with Laura Brown and Josh Landes. They'll see you tomorrow at 2 p.m. for that.